Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to DAVE, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. Join Dave and his guests now as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles and New York City and Manhattan, a big LA and big out Apple. Welcome to all our listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver at CaregiverDave.com, along with my lovely co-host Adrian Gruberg at thecaregiverspace.org, coming to you live and on demand 24/7 on 16 global and audio video platforms, including iTunes and YouTube. And also we're at CaregiverDave.com. We are proud to be voted number two best podcast out of the top six caregiver podcasts by Caring.com. And we do have an exciting show planned for you today. Kate Navarro Fessler. I had to remember all three of those names. And she talks about resilience in transition. Yes. But want to take a moment before I do that to thank last week's guest. I'm so unprepared here. Mark, I'll get back to you on that. But it was a great show, and you should check us out on CaregiverDave.com. So let's get started on this. And just a reminder, you can watch that show, that nameless show, and all of our shows, including this one, on our website and on all the other platforms that I just previously mentioned. Oh, it was Mark Machalek. Thank you, memory, for coming through at the last minute. Mark survived a traumatic brain injury in the spring of 2012 and eventually found the resources needed to improve his recovery. And it's an amazing story. You will definitely want to hear it. And let's welcome our guest, Kate Navarro Fessler. How many names should I use with you, Kate, just so I know?
You can just say Kate Fessler. That's fine.
Kate Fessler. Yeah. Okay. Welcome to the show.
You don't have to go through the whole thing.
Fessler. Yeah, it's kind of like Hillary Rodham Clinton. I noticed she doesn't use that middle name anymore. Anyway, why don't you take a minute? Yes, I'm such a digressor, aren't I? Take a minute or two and introduce yourself. I like to ask my guests, just who is Kate Fessler and why was she put on this earth? And while you're doing that, I'm going to try to get the Facebook Live to both of you.
Oh, my goodness. So I am Kate Fessler. And why was I put on this earth? It's been quite a journey for me, and I have been trying to figure that out my whole life, like most people. But I am, I guess my superpower is I can see sort of things differently and help other people see things differently. That opens up sort of worlds of opportunity for them. I have a favorite quote from Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, and he said once, change the way you see the world and you'll change the world that you see. And that's kind of my mantra is, you know, I have been doing that for myself and my clients, and it really makes a huge difference in their lives.
I like it. Continue, Adrian, while I finish doing what I'm doing over here with your page. Because you want this on the caregiver space, right?
Are you talking specifically about job transitioning or making life transitions? Or I mean, what define transition from what to what?
Yeah, so there is a portion of what I do that is career or livelihood transition. So, for example, in the circumstance of a caregiver, if you are suddenly faced with, I'm not able to go to my job and do what I used to do because I have this other obligation now, there are ways for people to make money without a job. And I help them figure that out so that they can, you know, set up their life the way they either want it to be or that it needs to be, depending on their circumstances. But the overall work that I do is really sort of holistic. It has to do with like your whole life, with your livelihood being a piece of that.
Okay, because right now, Well, I certainly transitioned when,
yes, you are.
You know, when my husband passed away, but now I'm transitioning again because I'm selling where I live and getting ready to move, and it's a major life transition.
Yeah, managing change, it can be really hard, and a lot of people kind of get bogged down in some of the less pleasant aspects of that, and it's helpful to have some outside help to kind of shift your focus maybe sometimes, or help you to see some things that maybe you're not seeing that can make a big difference in the way you move forward.
I mean, like right now, I'm overwhelmed with possibilities, and
that's a good thing,
I
right?
Don't know. Well,
the overwhelm isn't, but
overwhelm's not good.
Yeah, I mean, looking at floor plans online is addictive. it really is.
It's like going to the supermarket for diapers, and there's 37 different brands and types and sizes and absorbencies. I mean, I hate that.
I mean, it's the neighborhood, the size of the apartment, the storage, the utilities. Neighborhoods are endless here. So you've got so many bases to cover. So I've got a lot of different things to consider.
You have an advantage because women handle those kinds of decisions better than men, right?
Well, I think I'm pretty good at it, but it's still because I'm going to be leaving the apartment that my husband and I last lived in, and
yeah,
I'm still unearthing some of his things. It's churning up all sorts of different emotions, some very happy. You know, I can remember where this came from or with why we have this, why I have that. So
slows you down, I bet.
Yeah, sometimes it does.
So, Kate, is there hope for Adrian? Can you help her?
Absolutely, there is always hope. We know it's interesting. You know, Dave, you said that women are better at making these choices than men. But in the case of someone who's been married for a very long time, they probably are used to making those choices together. And so it can seem a little overwhelming when you have to make that choice on your own. It helps to just know, sort of make a list of what it is that you really want. Like think about, have a vision of what this new life looks like and what you see when you look out the window and what you do when you get up in the morning. And, you know, do you walk to the corner coffee shop, or are you sort of in a place where it's a little quieter and you stay home? You know, just sort of envision your life as you want to be living it, and then have sort of a checklist for when you're making those decisions, because a floor plan is one thing, and of course neighborhoods are all different. And so it helps to narrow it down if you have sort of a really clear vision of what you want it to look like once you get there.
Right, because I know that this is going to be basically the last move that I'm going to make in my life. So wherever I go, I try to do just that. You know, like, well, how do I fit here? What's it going to look like 10 years? You know, what am I going to be like 10 years from now as far as mobility? And no, I can't get a duplex because that's going to possibly be a problem. So I mean, I'm organized that way, and like I said, I'm pretty good at it, but there are a lot of different things to consider other than price and floor plans, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes too much choice is just as bad as not enough choice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, can be sort of analysis paralysis, right?
Yes. Right. Yes.
I'm kind of there also, because I just turned 65, you know, and all through my life, I remember saying, God, when in the year 2000, I'm going to be like 43. Oh, my gosh, that's so old. And then when I'm 65, gosh, Social Security probably won't even be there. It'll be bankrupt. Well, okay, it's got 8 more years before it's bankrupt, but they just sent me a notice that said I have to pay more for Medicare than anybody else because I'm making too much money. And I said, really? When I turned 65, you came up with this rule? So now I'm examining, you know, my life insurance. I've got 15 more years on my 20-year life insurance, which means I'll be 80. Mm-hmm. And I was just saying the other day that I don't think I want to live to be 81. You know, if I make it to 80, fine, and then that's it. Because so many people in their 80s, I know, 90%, maybe 95, I would not want to be. And you want to say something, Adrian. I can
but
see
But life is different now.
Well, I mean, you're going to say the 80 is the new 50?
When you're 80, you're not going to be the 80 that you're necessarily seeing a lot of other people now.
Well, obviously, because my father died at 63, and I'm 65 now, and he was in terrible, terrible shape. Mm-hmm. And part of me, you know, I'm being good now. I'm on this 21-day fast of no vegan and no dairy and no gluten and no everything, you know. and I'm doing really good. I'm not missing anything because there's such variety out there in all of this. And I'm wondering, I think I can go longer than 21 days. I wonder how long I can go. But then the part of me says, hey, don't get too healthy because you don't want to live to be 95 like my mother did because she had dementia for 10 years. And you know, gosh, it's such a balance. And I'm so also overwhelmed with how healthy should I be? How unhealthy should I be? I don't want to live to be 80. I know it's all up to God anyway. So can you help me, Kate?
Well, It is all up to God ultimately. But I'll tell you, I have two people in my family, my mother-in-law and my mother's significant other. And they are, well, my mother-in-law is 82, I think. And she could run circles around me. So, you know, it's all in your genes and how you take care of yourself. And, you know, and I think people are taking better care of themselves these days, like you are, Dave, with your 21-day cleanse and all that sort of thing. So I wouldn't be afraid of 80, and I wouldn't necessarily throw it out there that you don't want to live any longer than that, because you might change your mind
how
by
many
the time
people,
you get there.
How many people do both of you know in their 80s who you wouldn't mind being? Let's just be
plenty.
Honest. Really?
Yeah.
Well, I know two personally, and then of course there's Warren Buffett, right? Isn't he 80 something, right? I wouldn't mind being Warren Buffett.
I mean, Gloria Steinem, who I saw last week, is 85.
Really?
And
are these the exceptions? I mean, are they the 5% that I'm talking about of the population?
I
could be a 5%er. I don't know.
I think 85 is very different now than it was, and I think it's still changing.
I mean, I have aches and pains.
70.
I have aches and pains at 65. I can't imagine what kind of aches and pains I'm going to have at 80. You know, that's what's a little scary.
Yeah, my brother-in-law's got aches and pains at 65, and he's bitching and moaning.
So I'm not alone here.
No.
Okay. Well, let's move on.
It does take. I mean, the little changes. You know, like when you wake up in the morning and, oh, God, I had my knee replaced. So, I got to get used to that. So that was another kind of transition that I really needed to prepare myself for.
And I can't talk like this in front of my wife. You see, she's in the other room. She can't hear me. But because she just looks at me because she's 74 and a half. And she kind of puts me to shame, and she's in a wheelchair, and she can't talk because she's speech impaired from a stroke 22 years ago, and she's paralyzed on her right side, and she still outdoes me. I mean, she is a homemaker that makes normal homemakers just look pitiful. You know, she does the laundry there. She's remodeling this. She's cleaning that. She's cleaning out all the cupboards, you know. And every now and then she'll fall out of her chair because she'll forget to put her seatbelt on. And last night I'm in bed. It's like 12:30 in the morning, and I hear this, Dave. I go in there, and she was cleaning out the bathroom, and she had fallen forward because her seatbelt wasn't on, and it was a miracle I could get her up. I used leverage, you know. I kind of. Belts and you know, pulleys and not pulleys,
oh, come
but
on.
You know, I'll get the chair in there and I'll I'll push her up against a wall, and then I'll push the power chair forward. Then I'll pick her up, and then she's on my lap. Then I got to squirm. You know, it's comical. So I says, you know what? This is happening too much. I bought one of those. What do they call it? It's a
Hoist.
transfer lift hoist.
Like a
Yes.
chair lamp? Yeah.
And so they go for like $2,300. I found one on eBay for $200 used. So
Great.
it's coming, and I got the sleeve, not the sleeve, but the thing that they actually sit in. And so this way, you know, if I'm not home and anybody has a problem, at least they've got this thing they can wheel in there. It's portable. And so that's how I fix my problem anyway. So
Yeah.
what other types of transitions that we haven't spoken about, Kate?
Well,
Or
there's all sorts of transitions in people's lives that
how many for caregivers? Think of transition and caregivers.
so transition for caregivers, meaning like because they have to change their lives
Yeah,
because of something that happens to them.
the different
Well,
transitions that a caregiver, it's typical for a caregiver.
I
What were you going
mean,
to say, Adrian?
for me, sort of the first thing is the diagnosis. Okay, you get a diagnosis.
Yeah.
What do you do? How
Well,
do you roll with it?
I think you have to go through all of those stages of grief, right? You have to allow yourself the time to get to that point of acceptance that things are never going to be the same. And once you get to that point of acceptance, then is an opportunity for you to say, okay, well, now that I have this new normal, what do I want that to look like? How can I make that the best possible situation for myself and for the person for whom I'm caring, right? And then
Yes.
what do I need in order for my life to proceed? In a way that's going to make me feel sort of not. I think a lot of people, you know, I've heard people who have gotten into the situation, and there's a certain mindset of, my life is over because this happened to this other person. And either it's a sort of a I'm being punished and therefore I must suffer situation, or
Karma.
you know, they just go into this whole self-sacrifice mode, which isn't really sustainable, right? And so you
Right.
have to in any situation, you have to be able to, you know, the fill your cup, put your, you know, oxygen mask on first, those analogies, so that you can contribute as much as you possibly can to the caregiving situation. But focusing on yourself and thinking about what is it that I need and how am I going to move forward this way is kind of not always the first thought for people because they're so focused on the situation and the caregiving. But it's really an important piece because, you know, your life doesn't end because you become a caregiver, right? I
Right.
mean, like your situation, Dave, you know, you went through that whole grieving process, right? And then it was like, well, I can't stop living my life, right? I have to not only live my life, but I also have to help this other person live her life too.
Right,
And
right.
so that's a different mindset sometimes than where people are in the beginning.
Yep. You said it right. It's the new normal. And you know that those are powerful words because it lets people know that, you know, it doesn't have to be the end of the world, doesn't have to be a life sentence to caregiver prison, that it can be a good thing. And my wife is a shining example
Absolutely.
of how someone you want to be thankful for what you have. Take a look at my wife because she can't talk, and it's very frustrating when we have these deep conversations that you know, it's the only thing that separates us from the animals. Yet she has joy in her heart and smile on her face, and sometimes you just got to let things go. And with that, we're going to take a break. So don't go away. We will be right back.
We are a community of caregivers that understands and supports you wherever you are in your journey. We are a place to connect with other caregivers, but more importantly, a place to get practical, actionable help. There are lots of ways for you to get support. First of all, you can download our welcome pack. This will get you started on your Thrive journey. Next, you can ask and get answers to your questions by posting them here in our private Facebook groups. You can also get live online support by attending one of our live weekly Connect webinars. You can get practical, actionable advice by listening to our weekly podcast. You can hear and read other stories about other caregivers' experiences. Plus, add your own in our weekly Share Your Story forum, posted every Tuesday in the Facebook group. You can access essential resources and download practical Thrive Solutions packs, all of which are geared to help you thrive as a caregiver. You can get lifetime access to all of our resources. Again, we are here to support you and help you thrive and to enjoy your life as a caregiver. And remember, this is a place to get hope, not just cope.
And we're back with Adrian Gruberg and my guest, Kate Fessler, Kate Navarro-Fessler, if you will. And I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. And we're on the Caregiver Dave Show, and we are talking about transitioning and the proper way to do it, right? What's the word we used?
Resilience.
Resilience in transition. So that's an interesting word. What is the definition of resilience? Just to remind me, I know kind of what it means, but I'm trying to figure out how, what it means in relation to transition. Like after we transition to stay strong, to what?
Yeah, you know, it's, I don't know the official definition, but it's kind of like bouncing back. It's being able to kind of
resilient
fall down and pick yourself, you know, pick yourself up, dust yourself off and start all over again, right?
Like a song.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really what resilience is being able to kind of deal with whatever circumstances come your way in a positive
come way. Back, be the comeback kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we all have things that happen in our lives that maybe were not what we expected. And it could be anything from, like we talked about, the death or the illness of a loved one, a divorce, a job loss, you know, even things like empty nesting. Like sometimes people find themselves, the kids are gone, and they look in the mirror and they're like, I don't even remember who I am, much less what I'm going to do now.
They become depressed.
Yeah,
I remember. They were living their lives around the kids.
I remember it was quite some time ago, but 60 Minutes did a piece on people over 90 who were still working and having very fulfilling lives and how resilient they needed to be in order to do that. Some of them had, had buried children at that age, of course. So the conclusion from the person who had conducted this study was that resilience was a big part of longevity. Being able to cope with whatever came your way and to move on healthily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you talk about empty nesters, Adrian. So many seniors that I know are raising their grandkids in their 60s, 70s, 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost a recipe for disaster, because what teenager is going to, you know, let an 80-year-old tell them what time they can come home and stuff like that? but it's usually because their children have been irresponsible, or maybe they're just unable to. Maybe they're disabled themselves. Maybe they're even caring for their children and the grandchildren, just doing all sorts of things. And they don't get to have an empty nest phase of life where they're free and independent and can go and come whenever they please, you know, like we can. So we're very fortunate. But what do you tell people, Kate, when it just seems like life has been cruel to them, you know, when it just seems like, you know, they're in the Charlie Brown syndrome, that if it wasn't for bad luck, they wouldn't have no luck at all. And how do you keep those people, you know, looking up or being positive when they just haven't seen light in a long time?
Yeah.
Yeah. The key is really to reframe the experience, because we often, and I know I've had this experience, we often remember sort of like the bad part And then we have to be reminded of the good part. And I believe, and in my work I've found, that there's usually life experience is a part of what we, what our expression of our life purpose is. So any life experience that you've had is a clue to sort of what is a great way for you to express your life purpose, because we don't all have the same life experiences. And even when we do, we often view them very differently. So, you know, my brother and I can talk about something that happened when we were kids, and I will have a completely different view of that memory than he does. And we were both there at the same time. You know, it's like, it's why, you know, eyewitnesses are notoriously unreliable, right? Because you and I, all three of us could be in the same place at the same time and see the same thing. And we'll each take away something different from it because of our life experience. So, you know, it shapes the way we see things. And if we reframe those experiences and look at them in a different way, going back to, you know, what I said before, if you see, change the way you see the world, you change the world you see, you can see in them sort of the seeds of opportunity and the seeds of a path forward, instead of just looking at them as, you know, like you said, if it weren't for bad luck, there'd be no luck at all. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes within the bad luck, there's a seed of good luck.
Yeah,
that you're just not noticing.
And that's biblical. You know, all things work for good to them that love God and are called according to his purpose. And it's just true. I mean, so many, I've gone through at least two huge tragedies in my life. One was medical with my wife, and one was financial with our finances. In 2008, we lost our life savings. And both of those just had the potential, because I see another, I wasn't the only one to suffer such tragedy in 2008. Mm-hmm. There's no lack of others like me who lost their fortunes and their homes. I didn't lose my home, but I almost lost my home, almost lost my business. And they're still suffering from it. And it can either make you bitter by having the right attitude and saying, oh, well, you know, if we have to live in a cardboard shack down, you know, and eat government cheese, and, you know, we'll get along. We have each other, you know, you count your blessings. But others just get bitter, and they just, you know, get angry at everybody, including God, and that just eats them up inside. You know, it's like unforgiveness is drinking poison, hoping the other person dies. You find that?
Right. Yeah, and that's exactly what resilience is, right? It's like, yeah, you can lose everything and bounce back, whereas what I try to help people see is that you don't have to become, like, becoming bitter is a choice, right? Yes, bad things happened, but it's in the way that you adapt to them, the way that you address them, the way that you pull yourself up and move forward that either has a positive outcome or keeps you stuck in that bitterness.
Yeah, and there's so many examples. I mean, Helen Keller, the Jews that were stuck in the Nazi camps who were survivors, you know, there's just, you know, we complain about our pitiful little problems, and I'm not minimizing anyone's problems, but you don't have to look very far to find someone with problems that you would not want to change places with.
Well, I and mean, yet, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and yet those people can find others who they wouldn't want to, you know, it's like I keep saying, the guy without shoes, you know, complains till he meets the guy without feet, till he, you know, meets a guy without legs. And so the story goes on. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, this year alone, between the wildfires in California and the floods and the mudslides and the hurricanes on the East Coast, I mean, I watch these people on, you know, on the news, and it's like everything that they've had has been destroyed. Maybe they were able to get certain things out to save them, but some of these things this year happened so fast, people didn't have a chance to save anything, and everything is gone, and yet there are people who have amazing attitudes and will rebuild.
You know, because they have their wife and their children, and
right,
you know, yeah, It's
And I
the
think it
human
comes down
spirit.
to the counting your blessings and finding something to be grateful for, even no matter how small it is, right? No matter how small the thing to be grateful for, find one thing and then find two things and then find three things. And pretty soon you'll be looking at things in a different way.
Right.
And if that doesn't work, just think that we're wealthier than 90% of the world. You know, we don't live in shacks and ramshackle bamboo huts, and we don't have dirt floors, and we're so wealthy that we have a room for our clothes and another room for our car, and we have so much water we just throw it on the front yard to make the dirt turn green. And I mean, what are we complaining about?
And there are, obviously some people. I live in the Seattle area and we have a very big homeless crisis. So there are some people who don't have any of that.
But even a
But we
homeless
also
person
have
in
the resources.
America, even a homeless person in America sleeping
Has it
under
better?
a freeway overpass has it so much better than a homeless person in Bangladesh or in Calcutta. Wouldn't you agree?
Right. Absolutely, because we do have some, we have the services, the resources. I mean, in a place like that, you're
We have
probably not even
McDonald's.
going to find, you're not even going to find food in the trash can, right?
I was
In
going
a
to say
place like that. So,
that.
yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
So tell me how you came to do what you're doing. I mean, what's your past? Did you have a history of caregiving? Did you have a history of tragedy? I mean, where are you coming from?
So I wouldn't say that I have a history of tragedy. I've had some very unusual events in my life, but I wouldn't call any of them necessarily tragic. But where I come from is kind of I always felt like there had to be a better way, and that's from when I was growing up, and I when I was a kid, my parents took in foster children. And so I had the experience of seeing, kind of from an early age, how there are lots of different family structures, lots of different situations that people come from. And while at the time it didn't necessarily help me to count my blessings, because there's a lot of family dynamics that happen when you have, quote, strangers in the house and the parents are trying to take care of everyone the same, and there's a lot of stuff around that that happens. But I do think that it gave me a much broader view of, kind of how my life was in relation to sort of like what it could be. And as soon as I was old enough, I kind of left home and I moved as far away as possible. I grew up in New Jersey and then I moved to Honolulu, so it was as far as I could go and still be in the United States.
That's my stomping ground. How often do you get back there?
Not very often.
Too
I think
bad.
it's been about 3, 4 years since I've been there, just because there's so many other places that I want to go. But and Dave, because you spend some time there, like it's a big cultural difference, right? Like when I moved from the East Coast, right, New York, New Jersey area, and moved into the land of Aloha, right? It was like, wow, fish out of water, totally.
And I was born in Brooklyn. I go to New York almost as much as I go to Hawaii, but I like
Yeah,
both
so
of them.
it's it's and when you're young, it's kind of like, whoa. Like, I didn't know people lived like this, and so I guess that started my journey of self-exploration, right? Because I was like, wow, they do not understand me, and I sound like a really mean person, and I'm just being sarcastic or whatever, but they don't get that, right? So it was like I had to sort of re-examine my whole way of presenting myself. And as far as the livelihood thing, I had a great job, and but I felt like there had to be something better, right? There's always this, there's got to be something more than this. There's got to be something better than this. And I felt like my job was slowly sort of killing me. They call it like the soul sucking job, and the Just as the company sort of changed and it became sort of less fun to work there, I felt like, wow, maybe, like there's a reason I'm feeling this way because not everybody, again, this is not everybody feels this way, right? But I did. So I felt like it was part of my path, like it was kind of pushing me out to find something else. And so I got a certification in outside the job box career consulting, and applied that to myself, and then started helping other people with that. And it's really profiting from your passions and creating a livelihood outside of the traditional job world. And it's something that is not easy to do. So the biggest transition that I went through that I feel like I'm uniquely qualified to help people with is the employee to entrepreneur transition.
And that's so
Because
important because caregivers need to learn that because many of them have lost their jobs and many of them have gotten fired because they just can't handle a job and become a full-time caregiver at the same time. They'll try and maybe the boss will say, "Hey, you know, you're bringing your problems to work with us, with you, and you know, we're just going to let you go." Or maybe they can try working at home. So we're going to take a break in a minute or so. And when we get back, I want you to talk about the work situation because we haven't spoken about that yet, about caregivers who have jobs and who are going through some struggles, transitioning being a caregiver and holding a job down. And maybe those that really should become or be at least start the thinking process of, maybe I should be working for myself because there's no greater job when you're a caregiver to, you know, be working at home, you know, working for yourself, doing a business in your garage or a computer business or whatever. And I'm sure you've got lots of ideas about that, right?
I absolutely do.
I thought you would. So we're going to take another short break, so don't go away. We'll be right back. Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. Will help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver, on sale everywhere, and at caregiverscaregiver.com. And we're back with our guests, Kate Fessler, Kate Navarro Fessler, and Adrian Gruberg, and I'm Dave Nassani. And we're talking about being resilient in transition. And we've been talking about, you know, mainly non-employment work-related things, but now we're going to talk about the job when the caregiver finds out that he just got laid off or fired, or maybe he just quit because he just can't handle being a caregiver and going to work every day and just keeping his mind there, keeping his mind at home. And so is there hope for that caregiver, Kate?
Absolutely. There's hope for everyone. I have to say before I answer that question, it was really fun to just see that commercial because that was like sort of your younger days, and I don't think
Was just yesterday.
I
What do you mean?
met you fairly recently, so that was kind of fun to watch. Anyway,
Yeah, that's how long I've been doing this. I used to have hair.
My work is based on the changing course formula, which was developed by Dr. Valerie Young in changingcourse.com. And there are a few elements to it. The first thing I want to say is that there's a stream of income that anyone can create. You just have to figure out what the right one is for you. because a lot of times people will chase the money, and that doesn't always work out well because if it's not something that you care about, if it's not something that has any interest to you, it just becomes another job, which is not always what people need because that creates a lot of stress. So ideally, what I try to do is help people create streams of income that are really things that they love to do. So not only is it income for them, but it's also sort of a creative outlet, an expression of, things that they love and things that they want to do. And so it has sort of a two-pronged effect in that it helps them to reconnect with themselves and to connect with people who can support that and who appreciate that sort of expression. And it also brings in some money, which oftentimes people who are, like you said, laid off or are having difficult time keeping up with their job because of a caregiving situation, it's really helpful, right? To have some income. Everybody needs some money. So the first thing that I always ask people to do is figure out what it is that they want. And that's what I was talking about before. With your moving situation, right, Adrian, is you have to know what you want. Like, what is it you're trying to accomplish by creating this business? Do you want to replace your job income? Do you want to have some extra income? Is it something that, that you just want to supplement so that, you can take a vacation? It just depends on what it is that your goal is. And then you need to know, of course, what you need. If you want to be replacing income, you absolutely have to know, well, how much do I really need, right? You might want to make $300,000 a year, but realistically, if your bills are, if $50,000 or $75,000 a year is going to cover everything and you'll be comfortable, then that's what you should aim for in the beginning. You can always grow it later. So what do you want? And then what do you have? Like, what do you have that you can use to create income? Sometimes it's your skills and expertise from your job. Oftentimes, there's a lot of outsourcing going on today with a lot of companies, and oftentimes someone who will be willing to work just a few hours or part-time without benefits for, a higher rate of pay is what companies are looking for. So maybe you can still do the same thing that you've already always done, but you just do it in a different way. And then, of course, what do you need? Of course, the benefits is important too. Like, do you need health insurance? And how much is that going to cost? Because that's a big, huge deal for people these days, and especially if you're in a caregiving situation, because if you need to be the person, having the health insurance for both of you, oftentimes that can be one of your biggest expenses. So you need to know all of that stuff. But then you look at, so maybe you have, Airbnb is a big deal these days. Like, people are renting out homes in their houses or space over their garage or whatever it happens to be. And in some cases, for a lot of money. It could be that you have some land somewhere that you could rent to people for some purpose. Or it could be that you have a life experience that you can share with people and they can pay you, right? Sort of
A
like
consultant.
a consultant. Or, like you did, Dave, is,
Coaching.
what one of the places to look for ideas is what do you wish you had that nobody's providing, right? Like with this, with your caregiver website, you probably were looking for a central place where there were a lot of caregiver resources that you didn't have to go to a physical meeting, right? Because maybe you don't have time at that time, and maybe you couldn't find it. And so you thought, I'll create it myself. And a lot of people do businesses that way because that's, they're very successful because if you want it, probably a lot of other people want it too.
That's like find a need and fill it.
Exactly. What do you and your friends complain about when you're out having coffee or drinks, right? It's like, oh, I wish such and such, or if only
Men, I
somebody would do
think.
such and such. What's that?
Men, I think they complain about.
Yeah. Well,
Well, at my age, it's health.
Yeah. Well, but there's a lot of, what is a something that you are super interested in. Like there are a lot of people who are making a lot of money blogging about things that they love, right? They've become influencers on how many bloggers are there about how to apply makeup, right?
Right.
Or hairstyles, or look at the home improvement channels, right? That's a recent phenomenon. Now it's a big deal. People are making a lot of money just showing people how to, pick out paint colors and refinish furniture.
Yeah.
And bartering is an option as well, right? You have something, they have something. You do like the olden days, barter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My point to the whole thing is there's so many ways to look at it, and there are so many opportunities these days that didn't exist before, right? With the internet, you can live anywhere and do almost anything and
Right.
reach people all over the world. And so there are so many different ways to look at it and so many things that go into that. So many opportunities that there's something for everybody, and you just have to know how to look for it.
Start a radio show too.
Start a radio show. Yeah, absolutely.
Sell from the radio show.
Yeah, I mean, anyone can have a podcast these days, right? It's
All you
so
need is a
easy to do.
laptop. Even as I travel, I have my laptop with me, and I've done, Adrian and I have done many shows where I'm in a hotel room, especially in Hawaii.
Yeah, you could be anywhere.
Well, I have a website, and the person that I work with used to come into the office, but now she lives in Toronto.
Was it a home office?
Yeah, but it's big. For
Toronto.
the time being, it's big. And so she used to come in every day. She ended up moving to Toronto, and
Still happening.
she can take the job anywhere. I
Wow.
mean, she also house sits and pet sits, which is, so she's not just making money
Yeah.
by working for me. She's traveling around and house sitting. I mean,
That's
it's
a great idea. A caregiver can very easily babysit or dog sit or take their loved one
Dog sit, I
if they
mean,
can,
it,
house
the
sit,
dog can sometimes come to you.
You know what people are paying to kennel a dog? We had an in-law of my one of my kids, and they were watching our dog while we would stay a month in Hawaii, and the dog loved them, and they loved the dog. But their schedules started getting full themselves, and they couldn't do it last time. And I said, "Oh my gosh," So I had to make last-minute arrangements to put the dog with my daughter, who has two huge dogs, and my dog tolerates them because they're just bullies. But this time, we're going to take the dog with us to Hawaii,
Oh, great.
and it's not easy to take a dog to Hawaii. You can't even take an orange to Hawaii. So, so many hoops to jump through. But I called just to get an estimate of what it costs to, and I think it was like $30 a day for
Yeah.
dog sitters. Am I making a mistake, or is that how much they charge? $30 a
That is
day.
how much, yeah.
Is that what you get for babysitting? I remember it was like $5 an
Yes.
hour.
No,
I
they do,
remember when it
yes.
was a
It's 20 to
quarter an
30.
hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, do the math. $30 times it's $1,000 to or more. Well, maybe $1,000 for a month. So yeah, it's a great business.
It is a great business. Well, and there's an app now called Rover, I think,
Right.
that someone
There's an
developed
app
so
for
you can
everything.
get connect with the dogs that are, But multiple streams of income, right? It doesn't have to be just one thing. Just because you had just one job doesn't mean you can't do a bunch of other things to bring in some income, and have a good time doing it. That's the whole idea. That's the goal, is you find something that you're having fun doing, plus you're getting paid for it.
Well, so did you say you used to be a caregiver, or was there anyone you ever cared for, during your life?
So I was the oldest in my family,
Oh, well,
so
that
I
means you're
was
a
sort of the
caregiver.
caregiver for my younger brother as well as,
Sure.
you know, the younger foster children. And so,
Wow, that's a big job. How old were you?
11, 12, you know,
yeah.
It was, and
you know?
Through high school. So, you know, I didn't have sort of the extracurricular activities. I would come home every day after school and babysit.
That's very common,
so
Kate. Do you know how many caregivers there are out there ages 8 to 18? 6 million in the country. Six million.
I heard now it's estimated that it's 14 million.
It doubled just since yesterday. Wow.
I'm serious. I was reading and I saw that figure and it's like, wow.
And
a
lot
if
of these
you think
kids
about how much it costs for daycare, you know, you were just talking about
right.
the dog sitter. You know, the
Adult
daycare
care.
Costs way more
sure.
than that. And
yeah,
so if you have someone in your family who's old enough to be in charge, you know, for a lot
that
of
sounds
families
good,
that
but
you
a lot
trust.
Of a lot of these kids are being overworked, you know, and they're not getting, I mean, even the labor board says, okay, you got to have so many breaks per day and per and you got to have, you know, 30 minutes of lunch and right then and if an employer fails to give their employee the proper breaks and lunch, they are subject to severe financial fines and penalties.
Sure.
However, these kids who are under 18, many of them as young as 8 years old, are caring for grandma, you know, in 8 hour stretches. And, you know, she might need, you know, a lot of service. You know, maybe she's bedridden. Maybe, you know, she has a bedpan that needs emptying. Maybe she has a catheter. I mean, I don't know what it is, but they're just working too hard, many of them. And there's no government agency watching because they don't even know about them. And the number could be even higher, Adrian, because a lot of parents, they don't tell anybody or share with anybody because
right.
they're kind of ashamed of it, or they're, you know, they think they might get in trouble, but there's no other option. They've got to go to work, and there's no one else to watch grandma.
That's
and
right.
So
and
the eight-year-old, yeah.
And it's just, well, that's what being part of the family is, taking care of the other people. And they don't identify their children necessarily as caregivers, which is why that number, I think, jumped.
Yeah. And do you remember any circumstances where, as you think back, you say, oh, my God, did I really do that? I mean, did they really leave me with that much responsibility, Kate?
Well, you know, I used to babysit for other people, you know, in the summers because I had, you know, time off. I used to do sort of like the all-day babysitting for people. And, you know, looking back on it now, I know that they wouldn't really necessarily allow that. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like, oh, my God, like, this is completely overwhelming.
Yeah, well, but you don't know what you don't know. But now as
right,
we look back,
right.
you know, many adults talk about the beatings they got from their dad or whatever. And, you know, that was just normal stuff. It just happened and probably deserved it. But today, many parents would go to jail for those kind of beatings,
right.
you know, where they're leaving marks
well, you know
on them.
Well, what's interesting, I haven't ever thought about this children as caregivers, because in Washington, where I live, they recently passed some legislation that was very controversial about caregivers. And it was, you know, even family caregivers in the home, I can't remember. I think they have to join the union, the caregivers union, and then they have to be given these benefits, right? Like you were just talking about, like the breaks and this, that, and the other thing.
Family
and it was
caregivers?
Super controversial.
I've got to find out about this.
Family caregivers, too? The
yeah,
ones that work unpaid?
Joining a union.
Yes. Yeah. And so it
and they got to pay union dues when they're
well,
getting more,
so, right.
more money.
And I can't remember if they
it sounds like Washington,
it, but it was super controversial. But I'm sure that there was no thought of the children because these were all obviously adults.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an interesting point. I did not know that. And I bet you're right. I bet there are a lot of, you know, between, what did you say, 8 and 18?
Yep.
that are really tasked with that. And it's one thing if you're taking care of, when you're 15, 16, 17, you're taking care of, your 10, 11-year-old brothers and sisters.
Brother,
But
yeah, siblings,
another thing
sure.
altogether, if you're having to take care of, grandma and do real serious caregiver activities at that age.
And even adult caregivers, nobody, no matter who you talk to, they all use different numbers. I mean, Rob Lowe just came on doing a story about talking about his when he cared for his grandmother, no, his mother. And so he's getting a lot of publicity now, and he's bringing a lot of attention to caregivers, which is great. Britney Spears just put her career on hold because she's going to care for her sick mother. This is all good publicity, and we'll try to get him on the show.
So what's the number?
Well, Rob uses 40 million, which is too low.
Way low,
The
way,
best
way
number
low.
I came up with is 65.7 million, which I think is too low because I
I
say it
think
again and
it's
again.
too low too.
Your neighbor needs help. He's moving slow. You see him bending over, picking up
Sure.
the papers. Oh, let me help you with that. Next thing you know, you're reaching things on high shelves for him. Next thing you know, you're cooking him breakfast. And next thing you know, you're going to doctor appointments with him. Next thing you know, you're his caregiver. How did
Yeah,
this happen?
I
And that's not
mean,
reported.
a lot of it is a matter of the degree. Like you just talked about how the degree increases. But I mean, being a long distance caregiver, some people would say that's not being a caregiver.
Well, you
You know.
still worry about your parent, even if you're 1,000 miles away,
Sure.
you worry what's going to happen. I mean, I had a mother-in-law who's 2.5 hours away, and we couldn't get her out of the house.
Right.
And every caregiver that we stuck in there 24 hours live in, she would antagonize to the point where they'd all quit. We
They
can't.
quit, yeah.
And so the only thing I could do is put cameras around the house just to see if there's a problem, then I'll take a 2.5 hour drive up there. But yeah,
Sure.
we worried about her because what else could we do? It's
Right.
like worrying about the prodigal son who's out there on the street sleeping, under underpasses on drugs and doing all sorts of things. You worry about them every night. Not a day goes by you don't worry about them. Well, you know what? It really is time to
It
go now.
really is time now, yeah.
So, why don't you tell us, Kate, how somebody can get a hold of you? And I assume you have some services that you offer to help people.
I do. So my website is firstclasslifesolutions.com because ultimately it's about your authentic first class life and whatever that means to you. And if people want to email me, it's firstclasslife@outlook.com. And I currently am offering a 90-minute consultation, which is essentially people do a bunch of exercises ahead of time that I'll send to them, and then we get on the phone and we talk through them and we brainstorm and we come up with ideas for what they can do to bring in some extra income to create some multiple streams of income for themselves.
That's a great idea.
And if your listeners email me at firstclasslife@outlook.com and tell me that they heard about it on your show, I will give them a big discount. It's normally $497, and I will do it for $197
That's a big
for the
God, a
listeners
75%
to.
discount. Wow. Thank you.
Well, and I know that caregivers are sometimes stretched not only financially, but
Oh, yeah.
also, in their ability to do, things for themselves. And so I want to help out with that.
Appreciate that. Adrian, how do we get a hold of you?
It's Adrienne, Adrienne, at thecaregiverspace.org. And once you're at thecaregiverspace.org, you can get to our Facebook and YouTube and all the other stuff. All the links are there. And there's a Facebook page, The Caregiver Space.
Yes, and I'm Caregiver Dave, caregiverdave.com, and it's a membership website. And everything that we've ever done for the last 10 years is on that site. It's a membership site, and we offer two free gifts, a burnout quiz and a copy of my first book about overcoming unbelievable hardships, absolutely free. So check it out and join and get your free gifts. And thank you, everybody, for coming on. We really appreciate it. And we will see everybody next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani.